So why the new look, Jamie? You got some natural born killers thing going on?
Okay, so I wanted to change something for the winter. So, and I wanted to take out, because I have hair that's kind of, if I go in the sun, it naturally highlights. And so I wanted to get dark for the winter.
So this is the West Coast Project podcast for Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot. My name is Mike, and I'm here with Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, what did you think of View Source, Jamie?
Oh, I loved it. I really, really loved it. And it's been so hard for me to wait. And I have to thank you because I asked you for a special favor. I asked you to do the podcast like earlier in the week so that I could actually watch episode 8, and you did for me. So
no, that's okay. We're way behind. I'm happy to catch up.
Okay, good.
Have you ever used View Source in real life?
Do who?
Have you ever used View Source in your life just to view code from a website?
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. When I first got into websites and stuff, it was easier to copy like Elliot does. He kind of shows us. Yeah. Easier to copy and clone somebody else's good idea. Just put your name on it.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so in my technical editing class last semester, our instructor actually encouraged us to do that because, like, when you're coding CSS or, like, if you're using something that's not like Komodo or something, like if you're doing something within your school's system, they have that Darwin thing. I don't know if you've heard of it before. It's almost like a clearinghouse of code, and you just go rip off pieces of code and put it into yours because it's no use doing the same work over again when other people have done it.
Oh, so, that's cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool.
Is it for kids or just for anybody making websites?
No, I mean, we're in college. It's for adults.
Cool.
Yeah,
I'm not really too familiar with that. That's neat.
It is neat.
Well, this episode starts out with sirens in front of the Dumpling Town Apartments, aka Mr. Robotville, or Elliot's house.
Yeah.
Dumpling Town Apartments. So what do you think that apartment smells like, Jamie?
Probably dumplings.
Chinese food.
Okay, so Mike, when I was in San Francisco, and the day that we went to listen to jazz, that afternoon, I walked down to Chinatown and had the best dumplings I've ever had in my life. I'm not kidding you. They were so good, and you can't find them in Atlanta.
Yeah, I bet. Dumplings, unless they're deep fried, probably.
Right.
Deep fried in lard, pig lard or something.
Right.
Well, Elliot comes home, and he hears noises behind 4D. Shayla's apartment, 4D.
Yep.
And just doesn't pay much attention to it, goes in and does some drugs. And Jamie, Shayla's ghost is back. She's bleeding in the hallway.
God, I just really was so happy to see her.
This flashback of their intro on the heels of her death is really an interesting edit in the story.
Yeah, I thought so too. I really liked it. You know, but the writing on this show is just so good. And the story crafting is so good. You know, I really like that. And it was such a great thing to see because, you know, she's gone. So it's really nice to be able to see her again.
She is pretty cutely obnoxious when she was still alive. She's like, she's pounding on the door. I'm bleeding. Open up.
Yeah,
right. She's there with her fish.
You know, it's really cool, like the way that they portray Elliot's door, because he's so kind of antisocial. Like whenever anybody's knocking on the door, it's like somebody's trying to break it down. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, they have to pound on it to get his attention.
Well, not only that, but for him, it's like that moment of being horrified, like, why is somebody trying to break my door down when they're just probably knocking like a normal knock, you know?
Oh, you think that's an exaggerated perception by him, that it's like a battering ram and not just a polite knock?
Yes.
Well, Shayla sits down promptly and makes herself comfy with her fish, and she asks him to move her dresser. She just totally makes herself at home with this guy.
Yeah.
And then outside on the street, they kind of talk about their morphine and Suboxone deal.
Yeah, really, that's cool. The beginning and the end, isn't it?
Cool about their first meeting, so close to them, you know, to the end of Shayla.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Elliot doesn't like people. I'm back to the knocking on the door theme. Shayla kind of plays this up, though, into like, if you like one person, then you must really like that one person a lot. All right? She's trying to leverage her little girly attention from Elliot.
Okay, so I liked that. Because basically what she was saying is, and you know, girls are like this, like we like a challenge a lot of the time. And, you know, basically what she was saying is, oh, okay, so I'm up to the challenge of making you like me, is what she was basically saying.
Oh, okay. You decoded that for us. So, interesting here too, that Elliot kind of recalls her blip of a life, and everybody's life is a blip. We're gone. We're here 1 minute and we're gone the next.
Yeah.
And then he has kind of the memory, and almost an anecdote. I think he even calls it an anecdote, that she died because of me.
Yeah, well, okay, so what he was saying is, he was sitting in his therapist's office, I think. Yes, he was. He was sitting in his therapist's office, and she was getting him to sign his closing out papers, basically. And he was sitting there thinking about Shayla and saying, it's been a month, and I hate that I'm already beginning to accept that she's gone. And in a year, she'll only be an anecdote. And the horrible part of it would be that the extra added part would be that, after saying I knew a girl who died, being able to say that she died because of me. And then when he says that, it's voiceover, but when he says it, the actual like picture of him, like the video of him, he closes his eyes and shakes his head. You know, so I thought it was so cool because of the way it was timed, and it made it us really feel like those are his thoughts in his head, and he can't even believe what he's thinking. I really liked it.
Yeah, and he also tells us that his psychiatrist is getting rid of him.
Right.
Krista, and he's telling or thinking that to us, the audience.
Yes.
And asks us, are you on her side? Do you think she should be getting rid of me? And then tells Krista, you should clean your sockets.
Well, okay, so he says, what he said was that she was getting rid of him, and that he said something like, what was it? Yeah, that she didn't think that that she was helping him. And then that's when he asked, you know, are we on his side, on her side? And, and she said, she told him, you know, in the middle, it was so cool because when he's doing that voiceover, sometimes people break in to that, you know, to his thought process. And that's what she did. You could hear her kind of in the background saying, Elliot, you know, I really don't want you to go. I think that we still have so much more work to do. There's more work to do. You should keep coming back. And, then he gets up and tells her to clean her sockets.
So rude of Krista to break in on that when Elliot's talking to us like that.
Right.
Yeah, so he's not really get rid of by her. It's just kind of run. It's you know, she would probably like to keep working with him if she could.
Well, yes, I mean, that's the case. She is saying that. She's saying, right. Elliot, please, you know, continue coming. But, you know, Elliot's mind is not... He's not really very present. And, you know, I really like that. I think it's interesting because I think people do that. I know I do it, and I know other people do. So, you know, you could be in a situation and be thinking that it's one way when it's really not.
Yeah, you know, his perception is twisted.
Yeah.
So we do another show on West Coast Project called The Affair, where last season they did the two different perspectives, male and female, of the affair that was happening between four people, essentially the husband and wife, and then the affairs woman and her husband. And this season, it's all four of them, all four people. And it's really interesting to watch. This is Hagai Levy, the guy who did In Treatment. I think you and I have talked about that a little bit before.
Yeah, I like that show.
Just like that, very psychological, very, very deep and entertaining. Michelle and I do that podcast.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Michelle from TN on Twitter, you guys do that show. And, I've never watched The Affair, but I would really like to watch it because it just sounds so interesting. It's right down my alley.
So we jump now to the attorney's office, and Angela and her lawyer, her bulldog lawyer, I like this lawyer, we're meeting the other team of lawyers. So it's a one-lawyer team versus like a four-lawyer team. Yes. Unlimited financed lawyer team. Right. And they tell them they have mysterious new evidence. Angela has this new secret evidence. They don't really tell them what it is yet, but Angela's not going to give up on this old case.
Right.
And as usual, we jump around a little bit here. So back at Allsafe, we see Elliot with Gideon. And Gideon's a sneaky bastard. I don't think he's altruistic in that he's really concerned about Elliot. I think he's got his own motivations. But he offers him time off, which Elliot declines, and then offers him condolences for Shayla. What did you think of Gideon? Do you think he's on the up and up, or do you think he's up to something?
All right, so this is the second time you've actually used that phrase and called him a sneaky bastard. You said that before, literally those words. And so I don't know what to think about Gideon, because my impression of Gideon is that he is a clever man, that he is not gullible, that he likes the truth, and that he wants to get down to the truth, and that he is also sincere. And that he really, I mean, because look at the way that he spoke to Angela later in this episode. I think he's a good guy, but I don't know.
Well, remember when he tried to tee up Elliot to catch him in a lie, when he kind of said, yeah, we went to the server, everything looks good, I really want to thank you for helping catch this and to nip it in the bud, while he knew that there was a signature on it that Elliot had kept secret?
So I don't know if he, I don't know, I'm confused about that, because I don't know if he really thought that, or if maybe it was just like what we were just talking about, perception. Because when I originally watched it, I didn't take it that way. Like, I thought that he was really, you know, asking Elliot and concerned about him, and then took his word. And then later you see him calling to get that, you know, third round of, you know, conversation or checks on the log with whomever it was, and so I don't know.
You know, if they use that license of perception that freely in this, it's going to make it really hard to follow. It's already hard to follow this show. Yeah. If we're working on, well, that might be true if that's what Elliot really interprets. I know they're already kind of doing that with Mr. Robot and a few other, I mean Christian Slater and all this other stuff. But if you throw that on top of it, it's like pretty indecipherable.
Yeah.
But I don't like Gideon. I think he's up to something. So here's where we hear View Source. Elliot remembers ripping off websites that he liked and wishes that we had that for People. Now, Jamie, did you write down or remember some of these names? So the People had their View Source revealed as they wore signs about their real feelings.
But he didn't wish that he could see that on People. He was saying how awful it would be, because Gideon told him, find somebody to talk to who you can be your real self with. And then that's when he thought the thing about the source code. And then he said, you know, imagine, he's like thinking that was BS. He's like, imagine if you could see People, like, for, you know, People's source code. And I do remember some of them, and I'll tell you what they are if you want me to.
So he was thinking, imagine how bad it would be if Gideon's statement was actually true.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. That's a good take.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you remember? What are the ones you remember?
Okay, so there's a woman who's bulimic. There's a guy who's empty inside.
Well, you got to say what they say, because I am bulimic. It's like right. Bluntly.
Right, exactly. They've got these signs hanging around their chests, and one is, I'm bulimic, one is, I'm empty inside. One is, I pretend to love my husband. One is, what else?
Hey, did that little chime mean that was you, Jamie?
Yeah.
Oh, that's... man. Sneaky smart.
What did you say? Did you call me sneaky?
Sneaky smart.
You know what?
The computer caught you when your view source came out verbally.
You know what, Mike? Like a long time ago, one of the episodes of The Americans, you called me Sly Jamie. So I'm starting to think that you have a vision of me that's not quite accurate.
Well, what did you call me? You called me like Mad Assassin or something? All right, I'm bulimic. I am empty inside. I pretend to love my husband.
Yeah, one of them was I'm afraid of sex. What else? Gosh. There was one more on a guy, and I can't remember what it was.
I have I hate my family.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
I love feet.
Yes, that was the one.
I got a nose job.
Yes, that's
I
right.
steal.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that one.
And I hate my family.
Wow.
All right, so spoilerville here, Jamie. How many, now, are you up to 7, or did you go beyond 7?
I did not go beyond 7.
All right, I don't know how much of this we should talk about, but it'd be really interesting if we could talk about it.
Well, you know what I think we should do? I think we should record another podcast, like, later in the week, like maybe tomorrow or Friday. Because I don't want you to spoil it for me.
All right, well, let me just ask you. I'll be sneaky about how I spoil you.
Okay.
So Mr. Robot is at the bar, and now he's talking to Darlene. So so he's talking to another person other than Elliot.
Yes, and he does that, I think, twice in this episode, and he is by himself. Like, there's nobody there, Elliot's not there, the whole thing. And I was like, dude, this is kind of a weird thing, because it's a moment where you could make one decision or another about this, right? You could either say he is real, and I know he's real because he's talking to these people, or you could say Elliot is nowhere around, and maybe this is Elliot, you know, having this conversation, but, you know, Tyler Durden type thing.
So Mr. Know, Robot, so, is Elliot talking to Darlene?
Maybe. I don't know.
But, what did you decide is your point of view of Darlene, Elliot, and Mr. Robot?
All right, so...
I know it switches. It shifts in the winds, but what is it on episode 7?
All right, so... All right, I think I'm probably 55% in a camp of Darlene being related to Elliot. I think she may be his sister. Maybe 55. Yeah, 55% yes, 45% no. So I'm leaning a little bit more in that direction. I think that if Mr. Robot is alive, that he is Elliot's father. If he's real, then he's Elliot's father. Remember I was talking about my theory? I'll let you go where you're going with this, but then I want to tell you about this idea that I have about Elliot and Tyrell.
Well, my theory, my spoiler, a little bit less protected theory from everybody is, does Mr. Robot talk to people more, some people more than others?
Oh, no. All right. Yes, he does.
Well, he talks to Elliot a lot, obviously, because Elliot's the star. But in this episode, he was talking to the other guy. Who's that other guy? Who's the guy who's making
that's
the...
Right. Yeah. Romeo.
Romeo.
Romero. Right?
Yeah, is that his name, Romero?
Romero, yeah. Remember, I was calling him Romeo, and you're like, Shakespeare.
Romeos. Khaleesi's. Right. All right, so yeah, he's talking to a few people in this episode. So, I mean, he looks like a normal guy talking to people, right?
Yes, that's right. And that was quite a violent interaction with him. Okay, so I have to tell you this. So when Mr. Robot did that, I was thinking about the logic of it all, because I was thinking, like, if that's Elliot, it doesn't make a lot of sense, because in the episode with the keys, remember I was talking about that, and I was telling you I wanted to go back and watch it because I felt like there was something there in that crazy, surreal episode where he's, getting clean and, the whole keys thing is going on. I'm going to tell you what I noticed. All right, so there are four people that handle keys in that episode as far as Elliot is concerned. One is that little girl on the bike in his old neighborhood in the fantasy that he was having, right? She says, "Who's your monster?" And then she picks up the key off the ground and said, "I think you lost this. This is your key." And then there is, when the corporate overlord's thing comes on in the drug house, that dude, and which it would be Mr. Robot, I think it's sure that it's him, hands Elliot the mask and says, "This is yours now. You take over," or something like that. And then he hands him the key, and the key is on a string, you know, and he puts it around his neck. He takes it off of himself and puts it around Elliot, right? And then Elliot puts on the mask and let's go to our corporate overlords, and then it's done. And then in the all safe office / restaurant, when they're in there, the waiter comes and brings Elliot that raspberry pie, and he says, "Here's Pop's fresh hot raspberry pie." Like, he says it's Pop's pie, like Dad's pie, and hands it to him, and then Elliot eats it, and then the key's there, and then Angela says, "Oh, I will," or whatever she says. And then later in the wedding dress, she hands him the key back and says, "It doesn't fit." And he says, "Why?" And she says, "You know why." And then she says, "You were only born a month ago." And then she said, "You're not Elliot, you're something." And I couldn't make it out the first time I heard it. And then this time I think she said, "You're the something." And I don't know what she said. But she said, "You're not Elliot, you were only born a month ago. And you know why it doesn't fit." Okay, so that kind of perked up my ears, this thing about why it doesn't fit. And then you see Elliot back at his apartment in that crazy scene with the beta fish jive talking. And when he comes into the apartment, Tyrell is sitting there holding that key. And here's what I think. And I've been thinking this kind of weirdly on the edge of my mind for a while, but thinking, no, that's stupid. It doesn't make sense. But I was thinking maybe Tyrell was in love with Elliot. Maybe.
Is this what made you color your hair, Jamie?
What?
This long, convoluted theory of a key and all these people.
That's bad, Mike. That's mean.
No, you're just looking for a change. I'm just teasing you. All right, well, let's talk about this episode and what they actually... Oh, no, regardless of who is real and who's fake, let's talk about what they talked about. Okay. So Mr. Robot talks to Darlene at the bar about getting the Dark Army back.
Yes.
And can Darlene make that happen? Mr. Robot wants to talk to White Rose directly. I guess he needs Darlene to put him in touch with White Rose or get that meeting set up. And Darlene admits she doesn't even know if he exists, and then playfully like yells down the bar to some drunk, passed out, "Hey, are you Mr. White Rose?" And the guy groggily looks up at her like, "What?" So. Boy, I'm really dancing around. I really wish I could just talk about this stuff because it's interesting. Well, maybe we'll find a way later to try to remember this. Make a note somewhere to remind me. What were you about to tell me back in episode 7?
All right, hold on. Let me write it down. I have notes. Hold on.
All right, and then Elliot jumps to the CD memory of Shayla.
Okay, yes. Okay, so I wanted to tell you about that. Hold on a second. In the bar with Mr. Robot. Okay, so I'm doing much better, Mike. I'm actually taking notes. You'd be proud of me. All right, so when Elliot is deleting Shayla, he has a folder in his computer titled Shayla Nico, and then the subdirectory is photos, and then Nico _150429 zip. It's a zip file. And then he has a PDF archive, which is crazy. I don't know why he would have that. And then he has an MP4, a folder titled MP4s. And then he has another one that's just titled 150322. And he's, and it's really crazy because the bar at the bottom, like the progress bar, that was showing like how much data was being transferred and how much time was left in the transfer. It's the progress bar said burning, like burning a CD, burning colon Shaylin Eco, which I thought was really kind of, you know, poetic because she did get burned, you know.
I didn't catch any of that. That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So then, MP4s, by the way, are what, when we use GarageBand to post-produce this vocal connection over Skype, that's the file that gets fed into the RSS feed, an MP4.
That's awesome. Okay, so the final part of that was that the CD that he took out was The Cure, one of my favorite groups, and the album name was Disintegration.
Yeah, so he's burning Shayla. Shayla's disintegrating. She's kind of, you know, like decomposing almost, right?
Yep.
All right. And he says, I will miss her. This is all I have left of her.
Yeah.
Time for a wipe.
Yeah.
He pulls the wires, puts everything in the microwave. That poor microwave has gone through hell in this series.
Yeah, I don't think Elliot actually eats food. So I think that's all he does is use that microwave to clean his computer.
He just eats silicon chips.
I wonder. The dog ate one.
All right, next, Jamie, we see Tyrell with his budget team, his budget crew of misogynists.
Right.
They're making jokes left and right snarkily about women and girls they see and people they know.
Yeah.
Oddly, they don't even know anything about their own children. They're just making sexist jokes about women they encounter.
That was so weird.
And Tyrell, the misogynist himself, fires them all with, but don't worry, you're going to get the minimum severance package. Pretty brutal. Those guys had to have pretty nice jobs, and they lost their jobs in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Tyrell is a misogynist. I think he's a psychopath. Or, well, a sociopath.
Okay.
I mean,
making a woman open her legs while she's sitting on a toilet and walking away, like leaving you, that's psychopathic?
Okay, sociopathic. But no, I mean, like, he doesn't hate his wife. And he uses everyone. He's not just hostile toward women. He's hostile toward everyone, except for Elliot. He's only slightly hostile toward Elliot.
Well, he's not hostile towards Knowles. Just kidding. All right, so he fires them, and we jump over to Angela with the lawyer and the state's attorney. The state's attorney leaves, and Angela and the lawyer talk. And the deal with Colby's lawyers is they want total immunity. And Colby agrees to meet, but only with Angela, not the lawyer. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's a power move, right? To meet, you can't have your muscle with you. You got to meet me by yourself, little girl.
Exactly.
So, I mean, talk about misogyny.
Yeah, now that dude is a misogynist.
And the lawyer, Angela's lawyer, warns her this will be difficult. This guy's a brutal dude. It's going to be hard on you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now jumping around again, Mr. Robot and Romeo Romero talk. And he wants out. He's done, Jamie. He wants out of this whole hack business. He's figured out the THC yeast in cells versus yeast in plants theory. So he can put THC from marijuana into lavender plant cells or into lavender.
Yeah, he's combining the THC with yeast in order to turn it into, what did he call it? I think he said bacteria or something. It's like what he can grow in a petri dish with that. It only takes a few days to mature. And so it's so much faster than plants. And so now he's got a new way. He's putting that into like hand creams and things.
Right.
Rub on themselves and get high.
Yeah, I said it wrong. So he's not putting it into plant cells. He's like figured out how to extract it from plant cells and put it into lotions that can be rubbed on and you're high. And
that's
then he can make it faster and sell it faster, and people can use it different ways that are more convenient.
Yep, and he said it.
Smart.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that dude, like, I didn't realize how smart he was until, you know, until I saw him this episode. But he said he's tripled his profits.
Well, of course. Yeah. That speed of product to market is huge, huge advantage. Plus, I mean, who wouldn't want to buy a bottle of lavender THC lotion?
Right.
So now he pulls out a gun and offers to kill him if he doesn't come back and change the world together. Got to get the band back together, Romeo.
Yeah, and he's wow. It was so crazy because he was like, yeah, you know I'm crazy, and I'm not that cute, funny crazy. I'm like that crazy, crazy. I mean, like, he really went off on that dude. It was frightening.
Yeah, there's a scene in The Affair where the guy does the finger gun, and it looks pretty ominous. Mr. Robot kind of does that here. It's the verbal, bam, I can just shoot you and leave you dead, buddy.
Yeah.
So he kind of leaves him. He kind of laughs it off and then leaves him with the threat that if he doesn't return, you're going to be in trouble.
And he threw that gun. He tossed that gun on Romeo's table, Romero's table, and left. Like, he didn't even care that he was leaving the gun there. He wasn't afraid that Romero was going to grab the gun and shoot him. He didn't care. Like, he was just, that
guy's the only cool way to do it.
Right, yeah, you're right.
All right, so let's go to Colby and Angela now.
Okay.
Oh, geez, what a prince this guy is. He gives her tea. He's drinking a glass of whiskey.
No. The girl gave you your tea.
Well, okay. Mm-hmm. The girl, yeah. He's not misogynist at all.
No, not at all.
And he just asks her, all right, how much do you want? Write down the number. Money's always going to be better than what you really think you're looking for.
Yep.
So she's looking for justice or some sort of internal satisfaction. He wants to wipe it all away with money.
Right.
And so she starts probing him and asking him, Mr. Colby, did you attend the executive board meetings of 1993? And were you in the room when the decision was made to ignore the treatment of the hazardous waste? This is the problem that caused medical problems for her mother? Killed her mother?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, you know what? By the way, in that episode, well, I guess it was last episode that I told you, like, I got a whole bunch of stuff wrong. When we were talking about the reason behind Darlene being so interested in taking down Evil Corp, I said something like that if Darlene was really Elliot's sister and that Mr. Robot was real, that maybe they were upset about the loss of their mother. Well, I was thinking about Angela's mother, and I forgot that Mr. Robot is the, you know, potentially dead person in this picture, so I just wanted to correct that.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
So Angela tells Colby, I have info that can help you. If you just answer my question, I'll help you get out of this kind of legal mess you're in.
Right.
And Colby says, I don't know what you're talking about. And she says, if you testify against the executives who knew about the illegal dumping of the epoxy resin, I will testify that I broke custody of the DAT file that caused you problems in your case.
Right.
So she'll get him off the hook if he just testifies against the other people from the past.
Yeah, which was confusing to me. Oh, I guess, okay. All right, I get it now. Because I was thinking, you know, he insisted on, like, getting immunity before he would speak to Angela. And I was thinking, I don't know how those two things fit. But he was getting immunity for the previous thing, for, like, that,
the toxin.
Right.
Yeah, the hazardous waste.
Yeah.
So Jamie, she doesn't want money. So he's got her pegged correctly that way. And he starts to remember her from a month ago when he sent her away from the door. He didn't even let her in that time. And then he gets really crass with her. Mm-hmm. I'll answer your question if you swallow up my balls. What a prince this guy is.
Right? So decent.
But I think this effectively answers her question about whether or not he was complicit. And she tells him a pretty profound thing, that if you don't take this deal, you're going to become like me. And you can continue to have your money and all your luxury, but people will always think of you as guilty. And you're going to lose everyone's respect. And all the respect of some people you know are going to you're going to lose their respect, and even some people you don't know, and that sucks. It's a pretty strong play by Angela.
It really was, and it left me wondering what the heck she was talking about, because I don't know who doesn't have respect for her. It almost seems like there was some sort of a scandal, and we don't know about it, or I don't know about it.
Well, she lost her job. I mean, she kind of got demoted. I mean, she lost her position in the company, her
How's
status.
That?
Because Colby excused her from the room, like, you're not important enough to be here.
Is that what that was about?
I think that's part of it.
That doesn't make sense. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, her dad's facing all these hard times, and I don't know. I just think her interpretation of what respect is really important to her, and it does play on Colby. He does change his mind in the next hour or whatever.
Yeah, but I still was, you know what I was thinking when I was watching it? I thought, well, maybe this is one of those moments where it is displaced in time, that maybe it was indicating something that happens in the future, but we're seeing the past part of it, because that was just so weird to me, because it almost seemed like what I was thinking was that she got exposed for having, infected the computer system over at AllSafe, but it didn't make sense just based on everything that was happening in the episode. So
don't you think that all played into her past though? Like her exchanges with Ollie, where she was like kind of settling for Ollie. You're going to be my wife. You're going to be happy with me. And she's like, no, you know, this isn't really, I don't feel fully respected by you. You know, I'm settling for you.
I guess so.
So I don't know. Elliot and Flipper now are at the vet. She's eating the trash. And I missed this, Jamie, so you can help me. So the dog Flipper's eating one of the memory chips?
Yeah. Like when Elliot was cleaning his computer, wiping his computer, he dropped one of the chips on the floor on the way to the microwave. And then Doggy just came and lapped it right up, ate it.
So, by the way, do you think Elliot rebuilds these computers every time with new parts from, like, Radio Shack? Or does he just get a new computer?
No. What he's doing is pulling out the memory chips and maybe the processor. I don't know, because it doesn't look like he's getting that deep into the guts of the computer to get that out. But everything that is identifiable that would show any kind of memory or logs of anything that he has done on the computer, that's what he's removing. So he's not buying a new computer. He's just taking out the important parts. And
well, he couldn't do that with just taking out like this SSD or the SATA drive, the hard drive, and just destroying that? Why is he burning up chips, like RAM chips and stuff?
Okay, so I don't think it would be a RAM chip, because RAM doesn't store anything. RAM is just, it's on when it's on, and when you turn it off, when you turn off the power on your computer, there's nothing. It just ceases to exist, basically, in a memory type way. So it can't be RAM. Could be ROM, and you know, I don't know what else it could be. I mean, hard drive, you can wipe. You don't have to destroy a hard drive. So,
well, we see him drilling the hard drives.
Is that what he was doing?
Not this time. He didn't drill anything, but in the past, that's what he did. He was drilling the hard drive.
I don't know. I didn't see it.
But we didn't. You're right. And this time, we didn't see him doing anything with hard drives. So he was just like burning chips and unplugging stuff.
Yeah.
I guess that's all you need for a TV show, but if you're really going to wipe out a computer, you probably got to destroy the hard drive.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I guess it just depends on what he was doing, you know? Because like I said, you can wipe the hard drive. Like if you wipe it, there's nothing. You can't recover, you know, what's gone from there. But I think the situation that you're talking about, the time that he did what you're saying he did, is when he thought Tyrell had, like, gotten into his computer. And that's like a whole different animal. Like that case, you might want to actually like burn the whole computer.
Well, so even this time though, he's not doing anything to hard drives. He's unplugging stuff and cooking the processor chips or whatever the transistors are, the silicon chips in his microwave.
Yeah, he's those look like memory, some sort of, you know, like removable removable memory chips, and so I don't know, but yeah, I mean, yeah, I didn't see anything about a hard drive. So
all right, well, before everyone goes to sleep, let's jump back in the episode. So out on the street, and it's not your fault, I brought all that up. So out on the street, Angela's lawyer tells her that Colby's lawyers have called back, and he wants to talk to her. So get back in there, champ. Go right back up in there. And we jump to Darlene and Cisco now at a chess game in the park, or some central area in the park. And he wants to know, I think I heard this correctly, how long of a meeting do you need with White Rose?
No, he said, how long? Because he knows that she actually hacked his account and that she has been posting to Dark China as him.
So how long have you been pretending to be me?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clearing that up.
You're welcome.
And yeah, she's hacked into his channel with his handle. Mm-hmm. And he leaves in disgust, but the meeting is still on.
Well, yeah. He said, you got what you wanted. And he said, I don't want to talk to you ever again, or I don't want to talk to you again. And then he said, you got what you wanted. The meeting is on, and I would tell you to be careful, but I know that's the last thing you would do.
So do you think Cisco and Ollie and guys like that type of guy just end up at the same bar in New York somewhere, sitting around drinking at like 4:30 in the afternoon, lamenting about the women that have caused them all this turmoil? Maybe Tyrell. Now Tyrell, it seems like he'd be stronger than that. Scott Knowles, maybe.
Tyrell would be under an overpass, a viaduct, you know, punching some homeless person to death. That's what Tyrell would be doing. But maybe those two losers. But you know, Cisco is not that bad. He's a hacker, but he's not like a terrible guy in other ways. He was decent to Darlene, and Darlene just is out of control.
Oh, he's dreamy. He's got his own CD rap business on the street.
Oh, I didn't say he was dreamy, Mike.
I know, I'm kidding. All right, so back at Colby's, Angela does go back. He's agreed to look over the paperwork, and he's actually considering her offer and says, what's in this for you, to her? And she pulls him right back on point. You didn't answer my question earlier.
Yeah. Wait, before you do that, I want to say, I thought that was really interesting because of the juxtaposition between his character and hers. And I mean character like what you're made of. And it plays throughout this scene, this kind of like what you're saying, this kind of like almost like cat and mouse thing where, you know, he advances onto her like he's doing his whole awful person thing. And then she hits him back just as strongly with truth and decency, and she ultimately wins in this scene, not just because she gets the answers, but because she brings him to a place where he gets in touch with his own humanity. And I really like that scene for that reason, but go ahead.
Well, it's David and Goliath, and she's super courageous for going back in there. I mean, this guy's an ogre, man. He's just made these like sexual misogynistic references, and she's like this whatever 25-year-old woman versus this big leader of a industrial powerhouse company. Pretty brave of her to go back in there.
Yes.
But anyway, so she says, you didn't answer my question. And he says, yes, I was at that meeting and I did know about the plan to ignore the toxins. Mm-hmm. And so she says, well, tell me about the meeting that you were at. And when they ignored the leak, what was that meeting like? She wants details. She wants to know everything about the situation regarding her mother and how people made decisions not to protect her mother.
Yep.
So Colby says, kind of condescendingly, the world doesn't work the way you think. In January 1993, we were at a bar with shrimp cocktail. We drank a river of scotch. It was raining. He's kind of like belittling her need to know this stuff. by talking about all these extravagances they had at that meeting, right? Is that what you thought?
Well, okay, so the way I took it was that at that point, I feel like that he was starting to be sort of less of an ass with her and trying, like, starting to give her the information. But, yeah, it was condescending when he said, you know, that's not the way the world works. And so she said, tell me how it works, you know, and then that's the beginning of him starting to really be honest and, like, not honest in the sense that he's telling the truth, but honest with himself. And, you know, when he starts to describe it, then he starts to feel it again, you know, and he's talking about one of those guys that he worked with that guy when that he was a pansy, but he was also like crazy and wild. And that, if he, felt stress about anything, he would drink a river of scotch, and that they were all drinking, and that they had the shrimp cocktail, and they were mad about the shrimp cocktail because they had just had some at the holiday party. And you could just imagine, you know, like this room full of wealthy, important, powerful people just being who they are, you know, not caring about anything, and, you know, and then making that decision.
Yeah, I think he's starting to admire Angela a little bit more. Like, here's this young woman coming back into my lion's den and being brave and being confrontational with me about she's not afraid to back down. She's not afraid enough that she would back down. And so Angela even makes a finer point on it. She says, so let me get this right. You were drunk and it was raining when you decided my mother would die.
Yeah,
I'm doing all this so people like you never sit in rooms together again. Pretty bluntly, like saying, "Fuck money. I'm here to make like this sure this injustice never has a chance again."
Yes, that's right. And it was really cool because that was the moment that he realized. I think until that moment, he thought that maybe she was a journalist, and then he realized that you know who she was. I don't know if he ever realized that she was the girl from Allsafe.
Well, he had to at this point, right? He thought she was a journalist a month ago.
Well, I don't know because I don't know that he remembers her from Allsafe because I was looking at it. I watched this episode three times. Actually,
well, he knows she's not a journalist because she's talking about the meeting where her mother died. Wherever the hell she works, she's there because of her mother and the injustice.
But until that point.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because she was asking questions like a journalist would. She said, so you guys just went on as though, did you ever think again about the decision that you made? And he put his head down and shook his head and said, of course, of course. And then she's silent and he says, but then you go home and you have dinner and you wake up the next day.
And right. I know that's what he said that he did, but don't you think that was a little bit of advice he was trying to impart on Angela? Like, that's the best way to do it?
No. No. I think that what he meant is that's the way that life kind of obscures the evil and terrible things that you do. It just keeps rolling. It just keeps going. And the things that you do, the decisions that you make, even if they're horrible, that they eventually fade into the background.
Yeah, I took it a little bit more almost suggestively. Like, that's how it works, young lady. So you should do the same.
No, I didn't take it that way at all. And in fact, I feel like that he was actually ashamed of himself. Because when he said that, he put his head down and he turned his back. Like, he didn't want to face her anymore.
All right. Well, interesting. Interesting. So let's jump to CTO Knowles now. He gets introduced at the party. Sharon's there. Tyrell's there.
Okay, Mike, I got to tell you, because of this whole Key and Peele thing, every time you say Knowles, I think Khaleesi's. and what was the other one? The other one that they put the S on?
All of them.
Okay, so that's
Khal's Drogo. Well, they'd say Knowles's if they said Knowles.
You're right. Sorry.
So anyway, did you watch that little YouTube clip?
I didn't. I've been doing homework, but I promised to get to it.
Oh, my God. You should stop everything you're doing in life except breathing and watch that clip.
All right,
it's like 4 minutes long. All and right. It'll give you joy for weeks to come.
All right.
Better joy than I can even impart by remembering it poorly. So we go to the party. Knowles is there with Sharon and Tyrell. And Tyrell and Sharon meet again, and they talk. And she's kind of standoffish to him.
Oh, she's more than standoffish.
Jamie, what does Tyrell have to gain at this point? I know he's trying to work her for, like, she's the weakness. She needs to be loved or acknowledged or needed or whatever. Is that the only advantage at this point?
Okay,
because he doesn't use that advantage. I don't get it. What's the advantage?
All right, so I think that he and his wife had worked out their little scheme. I don't know that that he's got anything specific in mind. I know that he schemed this with his wife because before he went to meet her, she said, steady, keep your wits about you, basically. But I'm saying that perhaps by seducing her, he could make her fall in love with him, and then he could, you know, manipulate her in some way into getting her to make Knowles give up his position, or I don't know.
Well, and he could have. That's all true. But he doesn't do that.
No, he doesn't. But I think that, remember how we were saying that he's out of control? I think he just had a moment where, you know, he wasn't in control of his own emotions and his own actions.
Okay. Well, Sharon says to him, she goads him a little bit. One tiny little curveball and you gave up. I should have known you were nothing more than a bold entrance.
Mm.
She jibes a man for walking out on that bathroom scene.
Yep.
So she wanted him to pursue more and more. I mean, is this a common female tactic? Strategy?
Not that I know.
Throw a little curveball, see if the guy's up to it. Not that I know about.
Yeah, I am not that kind of girl. I wouldn't know. I think that's more of a fictional thing than anything. But it was interesting that when the senior guy over at when they introduced Scott to the room as CTO, he said, you know, this man was smart enough to marry a woman who is every bit his equal. And you know that Scott Knowles is a really dominant type guy. I mean, he's not going to take anybody's crap. And maybe, you know, they're portraying her that way because she's also like that.
Yeah, I don't think I took it that way. I mean, but this also kind of reminds me of what does Tyrell have to gain at this point? That Knowles is already the CTO, and they're not going to change their mind just because he sleeps with his wife and gets and interrupts their marriage or something. What's the strategy?
I don't know. The only thing I can imagine is that he's hoping she'll fall in love with him so he can manipulate her, or that he can do something with her just because he wants to get back at Knowles. You know, maybe he just wants to have that control over Knowles' wife because it would make him feel like maybe he's, you know, he's got some sort of revenge, or he's, you know, he's got some sort of ability to affect Knowles' life the way that Knowles can affect his life. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's got no payoff except for vengeance.
Well, he's in a powerless position because even the wife said he's going to fire you.
Right. So Tyrell says, come to my office now, baby. Back stairwell, no one will see you.
Right.
And we jump over to Angela talking to Gideon about her plan to testify. And he does not like this at all, Jamie. This is going to essentially end all safe. Everyone's going to lose their jobs if you reveal that you broke the chain of custody. And, you know, Allsafe has these kinds of problems internally. So she's considering now, like, wow, this has more repercussions than just my immediate battle with Colby.
Yeah.
She's going to have all her friends lose their jobs.
Well, yeah, I don't know if those people are her friends, you know, but I don't think that that's an angle that she thought of. And I certainly didn't think of it. And, you know, and I don't know if that gives her pause. But I know that Gideon's really upset about it, and I don't know what the answer is. And you know, it's actually kind of a moot issue because, you know, AllSafe is pretty much out of the running for any kind of existence anyway.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Well, they could maybe recover and get new clientele, but to have a scandal like this, it would be bad.
Yeah.
So, okay, Sharon and Tyrell are on the roof now, and this is where she tells them, Scott's going to fire you. You seem so desperate.
Yeah.
There's some sexy wrestling, strangling, and then death.
Sounds about right.
And then Elliot leaves her as he sobs, kind of caresses her face or wipes her makeup off her face, cleans her face.
Well, yeah, he wiped his DNA off of her face.
Yeah, but like his spit, his kissing spit?
Yeah.
Yeah, but what about his... Don't you think they could get something from his grasp of her throat, from his hand or something?
I'm quite certain that he left, you know, hairs and clothing fibers and everything else on her. And then you have to think about what was inside her mouth because they were kissing with their mouths open. I mean, he left all kinds of evidence on her. But I don't know if that what happened is for the sake of the TV show. Like, we're just supposed to say, oh, he wiped off all of his DNA. Or if there's going to be something that comes of that.
You know, yeah, that, I don't think it was destruction of evidence so much as it was like a, oh, I'm sorry, I'll polish the corpse, I'll leave you at least looking presentable. There was something deeper more than just wiping away evidence, I think.
I don't think so. And the reason why I don't think so is because he didn't try to fix her to where she wasn't in that position, you know, where she was. He didn't try to put her shoes back on or anything. He just wiped her face and left.
Well, what's he going to do? Like, prop her up Weekend at Bernie style?
No, but, okay, so if he were trying to, you know, trying to polish her up, like what you're saying, he would have maybe, you know, straightened out her legs or done something to give her some kind of sense of repose instead of just, like, the death pose that she was in.
Maybe, but he kind of intimate. Touches her face, like, I don't know, like, I'm gonna leave you in your pretty state, my precious little target. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it. All right, let's go to I guess is it a library or a college campus with Darlene and Trenton?
Yeah, that's a college campus.
Trenton is Well, Darlene tells Trenton that the meeting's back on with White Rose, and they need to get the group back together again.
Yeah, that's the first time that Darlene didn't look either hungover or filthy. It was nice to see her clean with her makeup not smeared all over her face.
Yeah, and so the team is what? Mobley, Romero, Elliot, and Darlene. And Mr. Robot, I guess.
Right.
So Trenton, we learn a bit about her background. Her parents were born in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad worked for an art dealer. Her mom got a degree online.
Mm-hmm.
And Trenton says they're going to die in debt because of all their endeavors to get ahead in the world.
Said they're going to die in debt doing things that they didn't enjoy.
So that's good exposition of Trenton's reason for being part of this F society.
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting because of your questions.
What do you mean?
Well, last time, you know, you were really curious about what these people's reasons were.
Why rock the world's financial status just to make everyone even?
Right. Well, I mean, that's not what, that is a byproduct of, you know, of what their main aim is. But in this scene, you sort of realize the nuances of people's motivations. You don't actually hear Darlene's motivation, which is the thing that you're so curious about, but you get to know that what the other people want. Romero wants a little fame. You know, Mobley wants to hang out with people. He wants to have friends. You know, and Trenton really wants to even the score. She wants to wipe out her parents' debt. And, you know, we don't hear them talk about what Elliot wants, but we know what Elliot wants. And we don't hear Mr. Robot's motivation either. And she didn't mention him, did she?
No, she didn't. Yeah, so you're right. It's like quasi-compassionate. Like, I want to help another person that's now behind the game because of their struggles. Like, Angela has the same thing. And she wants to help her father because he's so deeply in debt.
Right.
So Darlene then ponders how they all landed together out of 7 billion people. Her and Trenton, how did we get together? We're such a good team.
Yeah, and she says, I thought it was really cool because, you know, I can wax philosophical at times. And I thought it was really cool the way she talked about it because I tend to think that way myself. You know, of all the millennia and the epochs of time that have passed, we met at this perfect time when we have the tools and the technology to do what we need to do. And we both have, you know, the existence that would impel us to do this particular thing. And we met on the face of the earth. We're both.
But that happens with everybody over every social interconnection over every time.
Right.
If you look backwards, like, wow, just think of them. Think of the odds of, you know, Steve Jobs meeting Steve Wozniak in the same neighborhood in Cupertino. I mean, you could think of that all the time. Everywhere you look at great things that have happened, it's been because of, you know, proximity, coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, even for not great things, even for, you know, very ordinary things, that's kind of how it happens. But when you think of it in terms of, you know, whatever it is that you think is great in your life, you know, whether it's meeting somebody who you fall in love with, or whether it's, you know, finding a best friend, or, you know, finding somebody that you can bring down the world's biggest company with, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, it seems inconsequential, but everything's inconsequential. It's this kind of, I mean, some things are pretty determined, but for the most part, we meet people we're proximate to who have similar interests, and, you know, it's a universal trope. It's going to always be that way.
Yeah, I think so. But I think, you know, kind of what she was getting at is kind of like, this is an unusual thing for us to want. Not everyone is an anarchist, and not everyone is motivated through their anarchy, you know, to do this particular crime, this one. So, I don't know. I think that's probably what
right.
She
and it's accelerated. Trenton's parents were born in Iran, so what are the odds that Trenton's going to make it to the U.S. and meet Darlene, who has the same... I mean, it's a little bit more substantial between them.
Right.
All right, so now help me here, Jamie. Sisko meets with somebody. Is it Ollie?
Yep.
He threatens him. I couldn't tell if that was Ollie or not.
It was Ollie.
He's going to expose his name.
Mm-hmm. What did he say? He said something like, the clouds that rise from the shitstorm that's going to rain down on your head are going to spell out your name in the sky.
Yeah, that's Sisko. He's a poet. You can see why Darlene would maybe be attracted to him, I guess.
Right.
I wonder how he proposed to her.
Oh, I don't know. He's probably a decent guy. He probably was like, yeah, marry me.
He's a criminal.
Okay, so yes, but everybody in the show's a criminal. Except for, like, you know, what's her name? I'm sorry. His therapist, Elliot's psychiatrist.
Krista.
Yeah, except for Krista. Who else is there? Okay, and Gideon.
Well, yeah, I guess. Okay. So what was the meaning of this little scene between Sisko and Ollie? Why do we need to see Sisko threatening Ollie?
Well, he's up to something. He's going to get, I guess it's coming in episode 8 or 9 or 10. He's going to get Ollie to do something.
All right. So Elliot's back at Krista's, and he says to Krista, you told me I should tell you the truth always, and
all right.
The truth is I've been lying to you. I don't take my pills, but you do, neither do you. And he lists all these things he knows about Krista.
Yeah. So he says she doesn't take her Ativan because the amount that's left in her pill bottle doesn't match the dates of the prescription, And Ativan, I looked it up. Ativan is a benzodiazepine. It works by slowing down the movement of chemicals in the brain. And this results in a reduction in nervous tension or anxiety, and it causes little sedation. So it's like for people who need to function, they don't want to be sedated by their anxiety medication. And it's treated, it's used to treat anxiety or anxiety associated with symptoms of depression. And so she takes this, and he's telling her about it.
So you think Krista is an example of the people that you always hear, like psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, or people in that get into that field because they have their own problems and they realize, well, I could help other people, and that would kind of help me help myself get through all these things I have problems with.
Yeah,
she seems a template, perfect picture, perfect case of this.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever told you this. My original bachelor's was in psychology, and so I have particular leaning in that direction. That I think that people who go into mental health field they're either dealing with their own demons, or they're trying to explain or understand something in their lives that's related to somebody who's got issues.
Well, Jamie, this episode ends on one of the most dramatic points of the whole series. It's one series so far, and we've only seen 7 episodes. But Elliot has a litany of things that he knows about Krista, and he ends with a really profound one. But the litany of the list of things is, besides that, you don't take your pills to the appropriate dosage. Also, you're not good with money. Your Tuesday appointment with Marilyn is your doppelganger, and you're encouraging her to leave her husband just to fulfill your own vicarious fear of being dumped. You like anal porn. Your best friend Jennifer, you told your best friend Jennifer you wished your mom would die.
Her mother. Jennifer's mother.
Oh, I thought she told her best friend Jennifer that she wished her mother would die. Oh, I'd like to replay that and play it back for the jury.
I watched that episode like 4 times.
All right, I'll take your word for it. But why would she tell her friend Jennifer that she wished her mom would die?
I don't know.
She wants her own mom to die.
Maybe. I know what I heard.
You cry because you're lonely, just like me. Actually, he puts a pause in there. You cry because you're lonely, just like me. Pretty profound. And he tells her, I hack everyone, and I've helped people. And his revelation of what he's afraid of and what's intimate to him, meaning Elliot, gives us all, like, really powerful truth. He's not just listing stuff against Krista. He's admitting things about himself. Pretty deep, dark stuff about himself.
Yeah.
And so then he says, I want a way out of loneliness, just like you do, want a way out of loneliness. And is that what you wanted to hear? Mm-hmm. And that's the ending.
Yeah. Okay. So that scene, my God, so Louis C.K. had this episode of his show that was really a big deal last year. Or year before last, where he had it was the fat girl episode, where everyone was talking about how this was the most honest half hour of TV, blah, blah, blah. This scene of this television show, and you know how I feel about, you know, Breaking Bad and The Americans and, you know, the writing on the shows. This scene was probably the single most honest, cutting scene. It was brutal. It's probably the single most emotionally bearing thing I've ever seen acted out on any venue. I couldn't believe it. It left me speechless. It really, really, really affected me. And I was amazed at the acting and the writing. It blew my mind. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I really, really, really couldn't believe that they actually went there with that. And Rami Malek, he acted the scene so well. He really, that guy, you know, Elliot, the character Elliot it's almost like he vibrates like under the skin of this actor. Like, that's how I feel, because Elliot is so emotional, but his emotion never really boils through to the surface, you know? He's quiet, but he's honest.
And yeah, it was like he was stringing these ViewSource signs around his own neck one at a time, like, all these things about me, I'm finally going to tell you.
Yeah, and he's exposing her, and that was brutal. I mean, the things that he said to her, I mean, it was so embarrassing that I was embarrassed, you know? I mean, how could anybody sit there and listen to somebody bear them? Just, I mean, he ripped into her. He really did. And it wasn't violent. It was just honest.
Well, it's interesting how much you could find out on the just general stupid superficial technology level, like how much you could find out about her just by hacking into her, whatever, Facebook and emails.
I mean, can you imagine how exposed she must feel? He talked to her about her porn.
Do you think people could find out about you this much about you just by hacking into your computer?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That you're well, I guess through email. Email would be pretty intimate to know.
Well, I mean, no, okay. He said, I watch you through your webcam.
Right, that's true.
You know, I see you crying because you're lonely. I mean, he slayed her. I mean, that was rough. That was really rough. And that's, yes, it's absolutely possible for somebody to know that much about you by hacking you.
So do you, if you're Krista, you haven't seen 8 yet, 8, 9, or 10, do you embrace this? Or do you say, you fucking bastard, how could you?
Well, okay, so therapists are trained to have professional reactions to their patients when they do these kinds of things. You know, because, I mean, nobody's going to do it. I mean, that's kind of rough. But, you know, patients of psychiatrists and psychologists, you know, they have mental health issues. So they're prone to say and do inappropriate things. So they're trained.
They're prone to stalking and hacking. And
right. But I mean, so they're trained to be able to handle this kind of stuff.
I know, but so that might be her immediate response to Elliot. But did she then call the police? Like, okay, I've got to report this guy. He's threatening me, stalking me. He's hacked into all my stuff. I'm worried. I'm threatened. What does she do?
Well, I don't know how much she can do. I think that legally she may have some protection, that, you know, because of what he's done, but I don't know that she has any kind of recourse, because it's a patient-doctor relationship. But I don't know what her reaction would be, because what he did was so unbelievable. You would be prone to have a visceral reaction. You might not be in control of your emotions at a moment like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess I'm trying to ask you what you might do if you were in her position.
I would be
angry. I would be like, dude, you cannot do this. You learned a lot about me, and it might all be true, but you should not be doing this.
I think I would be stunned into silence. That would probably be my reaction. And if it were me, I don't think I would have enough mental capacity at that moment to react properly to what was happening. I think probably the first thing I would do would be to try to leave the office, you know, put him out, or, you know, say that I'm going to call the police or something. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
All right, Jamie, 8, 9, and 10 are left. The next one's White Rose. Are you going to watch just the next one at a time till we're done, or are you going to jump ahead?
No, I'm going to watch one at a time because I'm being disciplined about it. Oh, and let me tell you, I have the file extension name. I looked it up.
FOV, what is it? Or, sorry, M4V. Or is it FOV? We're talking about this one, FOV.
Yeah, it's FOV. So it's Flash Video. It's a container file format used to deliver video over the internet using Adobe Flash Player version 6 and newer. Flash video content may also be embedded within SWF files. And there are two different video file formats known as Flash Video. One is FLV and the other is F4V.
And Flash has recently, in the last like 5 to 8 years, gotten a pretty bad name, right? It's been X'd out of like all Mac systems. Steve Jobs hated Flash.
Yeah, and actually, I found out recently that Firefox and Chrome and even Edge, you know, like the replacement for Internet Explorer, it's called Edge now. None of those browsers support this version of Flash. They're waiting for a more secure one. So I can't play like some of my videos for my classes.
Yeah, also I think Netflix and YouTube. YouTube's now HTML video, not Flash video. So Steve Jobs swayed the world. Like Flash is, I don't know that much about it, but I guess it's a memory hog and it's kind of susceptible to hacking. And So old technology, FLV. Thanks. So I'll see you next week on White Rose.
All right, cool.